You're listening to Money Never Sleeps Radio. In your face.
What we got here is a failure to communicate.
Oh, have I got your attention now?
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
You know what I mean?
Money to be made in a place like this.
Money never sleeps, pal.
You're crazy. Don't run when you lose. Don't whine when it hurts.
You know what it takes to sell real estate?
It takes brass.
I'm falling, and I can't get up.
All right, welcome to Money Never Sleeps. This is a show where we talk about anything and everything that impacts the flow of money from around the corner to around the world. And I want to thank you for joining us. Topic of the day, we're going to go right into cryptocurrency. We're going to talk about digital asset treasuries and what's happening there. You know, I think that for a number of years, a lot of people looked at cryptocurrency as, you know, I guess that pet rock, right? What are they saying now? You know, you cryptocurrency, it is an asset class. It is an asset class like stocks, bonds, like treasuries, like commodities. It is an asset class. It cannot be denied, that part. All right. Over the past couple of years, you know, we've seen an explosion in the space in a good way. At the end of the day, you know, cryptocurrency, it's the future of finance. No matter what you say, blockchain, cryptocurrency, you know, blockchain itself is going to be integrated into all industries. There's no question about it. As far as cryptocurrency, it's going to be the center of finance. You know, in the world of finance, you have rails, you know, in TradFi, in traditional finance. You have rails that have been laid out over the past, 150 years, you know, since the time they were trading stocks on a literal corner on a literal street that had a wall on it called Wall Street, right? And basically these rails have been, you know, laid out from banking and from brokerage and so on and so forth. You know, the rails are there. You're not going to go reinvent the wheel, right? So the rails are there to be built on, and you have some smart people that are going in and building on it. Crypto itself came into light, and it was fighting. You had a lot of advocates out there, you know, for all the right reasons, but it really didn't go and have solid ground, solid footing until BlackRock came out and they talked about what they believed in. They changed their tune. And you have to understand that Larry Fink is not a stupid guy. Pretty smart guy, takes a risk and he rolls the dice, but man, you know, he built an empire. But you know, who allowed that to happen? You know, if you look back way back in time, you had a lot of financial innovations that transpired. You know, private equity back in the 60s and 70s wasn't what it is today. And I'm going to go into this a little bit later, but even banking and brokerage was different. Okay, crypto is the next phase of things. Now, going into digital asset treasury, the strategy, that explosion that has transpired, you know, as of September of this year, of 2025, over 200 companies have implemented a digital asset treasury strategy, holding more than $115 billion in crypto assets collectively, so all together. And still, I'm going to tell you something. As far as things go, digital asset treasuries, I believe that this is in the beginning phases. You know, you have crypto that just stepping out of the dugout. You know, stepping out of the dugout. It's like, you know, Lou Gehrig stepping out of the dugout, hasn't even gone to the batter's box, hasn't even gone up to bat, just warming up, stretching out. And that's what's happening with crypto. And we're going to see more of this happening. But look, as far as digital asset treasuries are concerned, the trend reflects a growing institutional confidence. We're getting some regulatory clarity. This is why you have spot ETFs and things that are happening. You have the CME that's actually going, and they're going to start allowing for 24/7 crypto spot trading and options trading, the derivatives on that. Okay, so, and there's an appetite for that, right? There's an appetite for that because if you can go on Coinbase and trade around the clock, if you can go on other cryptocurrency exchanges and trade around the clock, and why can't you do that on a TradFi market? Like, you know, I mean, it just makes sense. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that happening. You know, you have the New York Stock Exchange that said they're looking to tokenize stocks. Just imagine, they're tokenizing stocks. So you're going to have the Robinhoods, the Coinbases, the Binances, and other, you know, the even decentralized, whether it be, you know, Uniswap or PancakeSwap or Hootdex. You're going to have, at some point in time, stocks trading on there. But also, what you're going to see is something interesting in the space, that you're going to have the ability to have 24-hour trading. So that is going to be interesting. Now, I'm sliding back into digital asset treasury. Sorry, I'm bouncing around, but I have so many thoughts on this topic that, you know, I just can't hold it back, actually. Look, in the DAT space, you know, who sparked it? MicroStrategy, which is now Strategy, they sparked that trend. No one can question that, debate it. No one can deny it. Michael Saylor figured it out. My God, he figured it out. But on a scale that no one even thought can be done. You know, and going back to private equity, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, as I said, you know, private equity wasn't what it is today. Back then, you had companies going out there and they were, you know, they were going and being very ginger with how they were making these investments. Okay, where you had even, you know, at that point, you had Goldman Sachs, you know, they made an investment. I forget the name of the company, but they made an investment and they invested like $2 million of the company's money, $2 million. And they were shaking in their boots thinking that they were going to lose that $2 million. They didn't know what they were going to do. Okay, where now you're talking about billions and billions and billions of dollars in acquisition deals. You know, you have KKR, Apollo, and you know, and Carlyle Group, and all these groups that are going and doing this stuff. But back in the 60s and 70s, there, you know, it wasn't that maturing market. You had the likes of Henry Kravis, you had, you know, George Roberts, you had Kohlberg, you had the likes of Stephen Schwarzman that came out. You know, you had like Forstmann Little. You had all these guys out there that were doing, they were working at other firms. So they were involved in private equity. They weren't allowed to do what they needed to do. You know, so they went out on their own. That's where you have the KKRs. This is where you have the Blackstones of the world. They had a methodology that they wanted to implement. And you had, you know, Kravis, which was, and Roberts and Kohlberg, they were all at Bear Stearns. They weren't allowed to do what they needed to do. Okay, on the other hand, you had Schwarzman. He was at Lehman Brothers. Couldn't do what he had to do. So when they branched out and did their own thing, the birth of KKR came about. They set the standard for how private equity works, and the deals started growing and growing. They went from, you know, 10 million, 20 million, 100 million, 150 million, 300, you know, million, you know, a half a billion, billions, and so on and so forth. They, you know, they basically gave us some of the most amazing, you know, leveraged buyout deals of the time. Okay, whether it be Beatrice, whether it be RJ and Nabisco and the like, you know, it was just a crazy time. And talking about the innovators in the space, you know, you look at Schwarzman, okay, and Blackstone. You know, maybe people don't realize that Blackstone and Schwarzman, Steve Schwarzman, allowed and created and gave the opportunity to Larry Fink to create BlackRock. BlackRock is a derivative of Blackstone. Stone and rock, you get it? The correlation? So basically, that's what allowed that to happen. Very smart people doing a lot of great things, you know. And you had back then with the leveraged buyouts in private equity, you know, what happened? How were they able to go and do these, you know, $100 million deals, these billion-dollar deals? How? Well, very smart guy basically created something called junk bonds. And that was Michael Milken. Yeah, he did something he shouldn't have did with a guy by the name of Ivan Boesky and did that type of thing. However, he changed Wall Street finance forever. Not for a day, not for a year, not for a decade, forever. The 80s brought us that. Changed everything. This is what allowed Henry Kravis and KKR to go and do these deals. This is what allowed, you know, other groups to do these deals. You know, and it changed everything forever. This is why you have the digital asset treasury strategies. This is going to change everything forever. Crypto is going to change everything forever. You know, you have Tom Lee. You know, he just jumped on the board. He just jumped on the board. Actually, he jumped on board the train. That's what I was trying to say. On board the train with Bitmain Emerging Technologies. You know, that's a pure focus on Ethereum. He's the chairman of the board. He's the big kahuna there. And they're sitting on over $1.8 million worth of ETH. Okay, and ETH right now, and I'm going to try to paint this picture for you. ETH right now is trading, I think, at about $4,500. Up from, and it was in the 2000s, maybe a month or so ago, you know, so a lot of growth there. It accrued in value, right? But what they do with these digital asset treasuries, they put it in place. It's not for them to sell, not to say, okay, we're going to have it. We have it at 4,500. When it goes to 5,000, we're going to sell it and use the money to do a thing. Doing something like that is pure stupidity. Reason being, is that what's the purpose of having a treasury? If you're going to go trade, you're going to go trade. If you have a treasury, that is for the long haul. And that's what they're doing here. They are, you know, this is a pure play on Ethereum. So think about it. Ethereum continues to accrue in value. So let's say it goes from 4,500 to 6,000, 7,000. Okay, that company's overall value increases by that amount and more. And as they are putting it to work and gaining yield, they have compounding yield that's happening. So that 1.8 million over a little bit of time could be 2 million, 2.1, 2.5, and so on and so forth. And it just keeps compounding and keeps growing their treasury and really making things, creating value for the people involved. And then now we have Dan Ives. A notable Wedbush securities analyst, focused on technology, good guy, has good insight. He's not afraid to say what he needs to say about a situation, whether it be Apple, Tesla, Microsoft, whatever it is. He says on NVIDIA, he says what he believes to be true. Okay, and, you know, a lot of times he's on the money. You know, he's speaking truth, right? You know, he's become the chairman of 8Co Holding, which is focused on WorldCoin. That's Sam Altman's and OpenAI's token. They're looking to take over the world with iris recognition and so on and so forth with digital identity. Look, they're sitting on over 800 million WorldCoin tokens. Now, keep in mind, 800 million. Those WorldCoin tokens increase in value by 10%, 20%, whatever it is. It increases the value of that treasury, increases the value of the company. And the beat goes on. And this is what's transpiring. And what I think, you know, when you have companies that are pure play DATCOs, those are digital asset treasury companies, and they're publicly traded, you know, that's a specific thing. Yeah, you know, that's like a, they become a, like a representation of the digital asset itself. So if you like Ethereum and you like Bitcoin or whatever the case may be, as opposed to go buying it and holding the crypto yourself, you can actually turn around and buy stock in one of these companies and benefit from the growth of it. That's the purpose. It's like a pseudo ETF, but maybe a little more, right? Now, what I believe that pure play DATCOs, they serve their purpose. I believe that we're going to see crypto used in the private equity space. We're going to explore on the show right now how it can be used, right? I see it being an integral part of private equity. This is going to be an evolution. Same way, as I mentioned, 60s and 70s changed, the 80s changed how private equity is done. Even today, you know, things have changed. The thing is, with private equity, you know, you have a lot of dry powder out there and everything. And when that's put to work, you invest in a company, usually that exit strategy is maybe, you know, 7 years out sometimes, but it's getting increasingly longer. So investors are sitting longer with private companies. Yes, there are outlets where you can go and sell private stock and, you know, in these companies if you so choose. But at the end of the day, if you have an institution invested into one of these private deals and it's taking, you know, 8 years, 7 years for it to go and have an exit, you know, that can be a little much. So crypto helps with this stuff, right? There are a lot of ways to go about it. You know, I think that crypto in the private equity space is going to work as such, where it's going to be utilized for leverage buyouts. I think that that's what's going to wind up happening, part of what's going to wind up happening, because at the end of the day, if you have a private company and you're doing a leverage buyout, you know, usually a private equity firm will go put up this, that, and the other thing, you know, X amount to go do a deal. But if you're integrating cryptocurrency into the equation, you can go and boost up the valuation of the company. Not a fake inflation, but real. You're putting it in place for the company for a digital asset treasury. So now, as opposed to having a pure DATCO, you have a going concern. You have a core business of whatever it's being done. You could be, you know, making books and widgets and so on and so forth. Now you have a digital asset treasury on the other side where it's going to bring value, because you have the possibility for it to accrue in value. You have the possibility for a yield generation where if you're generating 8, 10, 12% per annum on your digital asset treasury, now that becomes compounding. So you're reinvesting that 8, 10, 12% into the digital asset treasury. So every year is getting more and more. You're adding value to your company. Now, if it accrues in value and a crypto goes up by 20, 30, 50%, 100%, again, that impacts your company, makes it more valuable. Now you can do pretty much what you have, you know, Michael Saylor did with strategy, and go and create, you know, really innovative financial engineering products that you can go and raise capital, buy more. You can raise capital for your core business, and you can build things out. Okay, and how does that work in the leverage buyout arena? Well, look, if you're going to go and acquire a company and you're creating a digital asset treasury specifically for the company, that's increasing the value. So when you go to raise this capital, you're not raising as much, right? Because the value of the company is higher. So you're actually going and you're raising what you need to go and build up the company and acquire and increase the digital asset treasury and so on and so forth. So a lot of interesting things come into play with that, a lot of interesting things. And it gives a private equity firm the ability to turn around those companies. And because you're integrating, you know, crypto into it, and let me be clear on the crypto front, I am not talking about some stupid meme coin, which doesn't make any sense. I'm not talking about some useless token that may be associated with a layer one, but it serves no purpose, right? I'm talking about layer one blockchains with native tokens that have utility, they have growth potential, and there's this stuff that's going on with it. There can be a Bitcoin, an Ethereum, a Solana, Pico Novus, an Avalanche, you know, XRP, and so on and so forth. You have things that are going on for the betterment of not only that blockchain, but of the crypto community as a whole. So you have this stuff going on, right? Now, when you're able to utilize it transactionally, you know, you create a change in the private equity space, because now you just did something. You created a digital asset treasury strategy for a company. You go and you do the deal. You acquire the company. You know, you raise the capital. You acquire the company. You leverage it to do what you need to do. But also, you're turning the company around. You're doing something, you know, that's going to give it intrinsic value. okay? You can turn that company and integrate technology and do so many different things with that company, where because you have a digital asset treasury, it makes that company really look like a forward-looking, you know, visionary type of company. They're looking at the future. So why else would you have a digital asset treasury if you were not a forward thinker? Now, those that look at it and say, oh, I won't do that, that doesn't make any sense, it's like a pet rock. Well, you guess what? These are the people that are going to be sitting at home watching TV, and they're going to say, wow, that's my competitor. He did that. And look at him now. I wish I would have did that. Oh, well, you could have, but you didn't. Oh, too bad, so sad. And you wind up losing out on the opportunity. But when you start to embrace it, you begin to understand all the potential, where you can collateralize digital asset treasuries to go raise capital. You can go and, you know, you can go and tokenize projects. You can do that. You know, you have the ability to use other technology, you know, smart contracts and escrow and for deal structuring and everything to go make further acquisitions, because now you're in that realm. You can acquire other companies and do other deals, you know. And again, in an LBO structure, you know, LBO structure, you're talking about potentially having a digital note. You know, maybe, you know, you wind up having a perpetual digital credit note or a convertible digital credit note and that type of thing. I mean, basically, you know, what I'm looking at, you know, and when you're looking at perpetual digital credit notes and the convertible, even the convertible ones, what I'm looking at is basically a modern day junk bond, high yield bonds. Okay, they're collateralized by not only the crypto assets, but also by the company. Okay, and again, it becomes extremely interesting. And then with the likes of Coinbase, Binance, and, you know, and all these companies, Kraken and everything else, what they're doing, they're creating secondary market liquidity for these tokens. So if you go and you have a bond and you do that type of thing, you're going to have the ability to go and probably do something with it, okay, to go and monetize it or actually go and attract investors that are crypto native investors. It changes the scope of the investor base. It changes the logistics, because now, as opposed to being just going and putting something out there where only people in the U.S. can buy it, because you have restrictions on the New York and NASDAQ and everything else, so you can't, you know, you're in a country, you can't buy a thing. Well, if you have a centralized crypto exchange, it may have certain restrictions as well. But if you're doing stuff on a decentralized level, well, you're doing your thing wherever you are. And that's the great thing about cryptocurrency. It provides freedom. You know, blockchain, crypto, that's not, and I say this with all, how can I put it? I'm not going to say authority. That would be the wrong word. But the reality is that traditional finance is not going anywhere. All right, let's get that straight. Crypto is not going to replace it. Okay, imagine you just bought a company that makes trains, and you say, well, I made trains. Now I want to go and create my own rail. Why would you do it if the rails are there? The rails may not be perfect, but they can be fixed. And if you have the engineering to fix these rails, now all of a sudden it becomes valuable. More valuable than before. TradFi, that's traditional finance, TradFi, basically those are the rails. They're embedded in society, not just in the U.S., but globally, embedded in society forever, for the past 150 years or so. Okay, so you're going to see how blockchain and crypto can integrate into this. This is why you have, like, you know, when Tether, you know, a few years back, maybe, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, you know, people, you know, were really, really utilizing it. But it was in a crypto native type of environment, right? They were utilizing it. But then what happened? there was an inflection point. There was something that transpired. Then all of a sudden, what happened? Once BlackRock got involved and banks started exploring everything else, and now with Trump, you know, he changed everything. Trump being elected changed everything for the better. You know, granted, as I said, you had Senator Cynthia Lummis, and you had a lot of, you know, people, you know, Armstrong from Coinbase, you had all these guys from all these different firms. They were lobbying for crypto regulation and crypto this, crypto that, you know, but until these big boys got involved, it was hard to do. It was hard. Trump got elected. He was a pro-crypto president. People thought his words were just words like you normally get from a politician. Oh, no, 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 no. His words are being fulfilled point by point, little by little. And it's opening up everything. This is why you have the JP Morgans. You have, you know, they're looking at their own stable coin. You have, you know, from PayPal on down, Fidelity, Franklin Templeton, you know, as I said, BlackRock, Goldman Sachs. You have all these firms that are doing things. Morgan Stanley, they're doing stuff in this space, whether you know it or not. Either they're going and they're backing these companies that, and even in private equity, you're backing these companies in crypto. And crypto trading and crypto in a crypto exchange and stable coins, whatever it is, they know what's happening. They know this is the future. So if you know all this, why wouldn't you do something about it? Well, they are. And it's up to the rest of the world to kind of wake up and say, oh, wow, this is happening. All right. And this is why I say, you know, you have the layer one blockchains, these blockchains that have true utility and growth potential, these are the ones that are going to go and be a part of this whole evolution. Okay, they're going to be a part of all this whole evolution, you know. And again, mark my words, you know, we already see it with Bitcoin and Ethereum, but you're going to see it with Solana, Pico Novus, you're going to see it with Avalanche, you're going to see it, you know, even we, you know, that Ton blockchain, you know, they're doing stuff over there. You know, and you have things going on with other blockchains as well. But again, they're all value adds, right? They all have utility. And at the end of the day, that's what it's about. The hybrid model is what I think is going to set the stage for everything. And that's gonna run through private equity, I believe, you know, where you can have companies that have their core business, the going concern, they're building their core business. And again, this is going to be across, and mark my words, across biotech, manufacturing. Okay, the companies that are capital intensive, that they need things to keep going, you know. You know, the oil and gas companies and stuff like that, you know, smaller ones that that want to utilize this, these are the ones that are going to leverage this to better their company. It creates a better, you know, a more stable environment, okay, for their investors too. Because now if you know that they have multiple potential growth mechanisms, that makes these companies a little more valuable than they were before if they were just with their core business. And this is the key. These businesses adopting a digital asset treasury strategy and doing this better as a company. Let me say it again. Companies, private or public, with their core business and doing it that and continuing to grow their core business, that adopt a digital asset treasury strategy, they are going to be the beneficiaries of the growth that's going to be coming. And you're going to have a lot of dry powder that's going to be coming out and going to work. You're going to have a lot of investors that are going to be looking at these companies and saying, you know what? This is interesting. This is what they have. They have, you know, different growth mechanisms here. And yeah. And now you have the ability, if you're a private company, to go public, roll into a SPAC, or do something like that. So again, you know, my prediction here is that private equity is going to get heavy in the crypto space. Okay, and we're going to see it. You don't see it yet, but trust me, it's happening. So the public is not seeing it yet, but they will. They will. You know, anyway, you know, for the next few episodes, I'm gonna try to get some input from some other players in the crypto space, and you know, get their insight to what's actually happening and what the future looks like as the convergence of TradFi and DeFi come together. All right, so that's going to be the premise of the next several shows of Money Never Sleeps. So until then, I want to thank you guys for tuning in, and thank you for listening to my my ramblings on the topic. But I think that it is useful information, and you know, I do believe that if you're looking at the evolution of finance, this is it. You know, I do implore you to go and understand history a little bit and do a little research. Look into Babylon and how Babylon, when they established Babylon, how they created currency. The currency that we know, they created currency. They created commerce. They created all this stuff. And it's crazy. They were, I think, Babylon was 30, 40, 50 miles away from Baghdad, you know. So that's interesting. But, you know, the future of finance is coming. It's rolling in. It revolves around blockchain. It revolves around DeFi, TradFi, crypto. This is how things are rolling. All right. Anyway, thank you guys for tuning in. I hope that you guys have a fantastic day, a profitable trading day. I don't care if it's stocks, crypto, bonds, whatever you're doing, commodities. Make it all happen. All right. We'll be back with you on the next episode of Money Never Sleeps.
Initiating shutdown sequence.
You're listening to UCW Radio in your face.
What is your major malfunction?
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on Money Never Sleeps Radio are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial advice. The host Louis Balafkef and guests of Money Never Sleeps Radio are not licensed financial advisors, and any investment decisions made based on information presented in this podcast are at the listener's own risk. Listeners are encouraged to consult with a qualified financial advisor or investment professional before making any investment decisions. The podcast hosts and guests do not endorse or recommend any specific investment strategies or products. All investments involve risk, and past performance is not indicative of future results.